The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 6th of January, 2021. On the podcast today, Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Equals, discusses their positive trading update for the full year 2020. Also on the podcast, Mike Ralston, CEO of Blencow Resources, discusses their graphite project, the EV market, and their opportunity. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you at the end of the podcast. And this is the top five most followed companies and the top five most read RNSs. You can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's a Bahamas Petroleum Company that continues to drill at Perseverance 1. There's a big interview there with Paul Hill, Macro Investing, a 2021 Masterclass with James Bevan, Colin McLean, who else is there, and James Athey. So check that out there on the front page. Also, our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser today is Gfinity. It was Gfinity, and now it's E-Therapeutics. In fact, that was the biggest fall yesterday, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. But Gfinity is up over 10% to 4.3%. E-Therapeutics is now at 13% to 19.5%. Biggest fallers today, N4 Pharma, 3% down, and Gene Drive down 4% to 47 pence there. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Equals, EQLS ticker. Ian, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, happy new year. And it's a happy new year for you. A trading update released today for the full year 2020, and share prices reacting positively, as is the trading update. And we'll dig into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, Ian, if someone's listening, never heard of Equals, could you just explain what the business is all about, please?
That's a great question, particularly as you might read in the update, we are trying to nail the fact that we are not what we originally were. When we were Fair Effects, we were a travel money business based around a prepaid travel card. Whilst we still do that, it's a fraction of what we now do. We're a B2B or sort of corporate-focused business offering a unified single suite of products to corporates, particularly in the SME space, so small and medium-sized corporates. They can do both domestic and international payments, single payments right the way up to bulk payments, seamlessly, rapidly, and cheaply all around the world.
Yeah, and that pivot, that refocused, couldn't have come at a better time considering COVID and travel and what's happened there, could it?
I guess, that certainly wasn't the reason for doing it.
No.
It was clear that B2C side of it, particularly with companies coming and using free FX as a means to acquire customers like a Revolut or a Monzo, that we needed to switch our focus. And we found this niche. People say, who are your competitors? And it's quite hard to pick one, because the collection of stuff that we've now assembled, no one's really attacking this SME space with the products that we have. If you're an SME, you might want to make a load of payments via a bank transfer. But equally, these days, especially for e-commerce, you have to pay by card, and we can allow corporates to pay by card also. So we found a good spot, I believe, in the payment space, and we're pushing, ahead aggressively in that. And that's really what's driven an exceptional set of numbers, given what happened in 2020.
Well, let's talk about those. First of all, take us through your revenue. What's going to happen there?
Well, I wish the market forecast that we have in the market for next year is at 32 million, which is 10% up. Clearly, none of us know precisely what's going to happen. I think the general recognition is at least the first quarter is going to be somewhat difficult. And things should get better as vaccines become more prevalent as the year goes on. And we're thinking in the same way. We see a lot of upside from the numbers we have in the market. But we are by nature now cautious. We don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, as witness the trading statement that we've just done. I should probably point out also, the only number we didn't put in the trading statement was, if you will, turnover, or the volume of transactions that have gone through our business in 2020, and that was basically 20% higher than the year before. And that again reflects all the corporate activity, which is, whilst lower margin, you know, bigger size transactions and more repeat business, which further underlines how the business has been growing strongly in terms of its core B2B piece throughout the pandemic year.
Yeah. And you talked about your EBITDA is now expected to be around 1 million, which again, comfortably ahead of market expectations. And this is, when you think about where we've come from, the year we've had, you know, then you've got to feel pretty comfortable with the year ahead, haven't you?
Well, when everything hit in late March, early April, naturally, and I understand why, to some extent, why the share price suffered, you know, but people are still thinking, well, they do a travel card, don't they? And as I said, it's, you know, while still a good product for us, it's by no means where we now make the significant part of our money. And so questions were raised, you know, would we have to raise money, all those sort of things. And I think we've laid those to rest. We have, dramatically trimmed our cost base, as you can see. But the important thing is, you know, you can cut costs and have less people. You know, we're down around 250 or so now in terms of headcount. But you can also thereby damage your business. What we've done is cut back, but still ploughing forwards incredibly fast. We're gaining the efficiencies of based on the investments that we've made over the last couple of years. So, you know, I am cautiously optimistic. I don't want to get ahead of myself. In some ways, whilst 2020 and looking back is important, and what matters now is what we do going forwards. Not going to relax at all. You know, some of the hard work's done, but we've got a lot of challenges ahead. But I am, you know, very happy with the position we've put the business in over the last 12 months.
Yeah, well, top line and bottom line, of course. I mean, cash's position's gone up. That's nice, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you know, there's no. It's not like we've delayed paying people or this, that, and the other. You know, we've been managing our working capital more tightly. There's a lot of initiatives there, as well as, you know, reducing the overall cost base of the business. So, we're in a good position, and I think way better than people would generally have thought we would be when all of this started happening in March and April of last year.
Yeah. And I suppose it's almost very similar, isn't it, to where we are generally, globally, especially in the UK. We've got the vaccines rolling out, and so we've got that light at the end of the tunnel. Like I say, you've refocused the business, and it's almost like we've heard this analogy of light at the end of the tunnel. Do you think you're there? You know, you're out there, there's light there, now you are travelling towards that, or you're through there, and it's getting better anyway, you know?
We're just coming out of the tunnel, about to approach the toll gate, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, clearly, you know, the more activity there is in the world and the more businesses can transact, then the better it will be for us. I do feel that way. You know, there's a general feeling. I know we're in effectively as bad a lockdown as we were in April, but people and businesses have reacted such that we're all able to work remotely far better than we were when it first hit. You know, I don't think the effect on the economy will be quite as severe as it was then. People have adapted and they can see the sort of prospect of vaccines being widely available relatively quickly. Plus, let's not forget, although not completely out of the way, you know, Brexit, at least there is a deal. There's some, you know, all of that's died down a bit, which means there's less uncertainty on that score as well. So, yeah, a quarter to be weathered, and then the rest of the year looks much more pleasant.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well, though, you know, with stock markets, and the people know that, you know, I think, like I said, yesterday was a bit sort of bearish, I thought, obviously lockdown. But then people deal with it. As long as you know what you're dealing with and you can move on, you look beyond that and think, okay, well, it's going to be a tough quarter. And then all of a sudden, we start to get a bit more bullish and optimistic because we see, like you said, there's light there at the end of the tunnel, and we're heading towards that. So, stock market wise and share price wise, I don't think it'll be that bearish a quarter. I think get towards at least maybe even halfway, and we realize, hang on a sec, it's going in the right direction, and we'll start to rally. Like I say, Brexit is done as well, pretty much, and so there's not a lot holding us back, I think. So, we may have obviously be a bit volatile. But I think, I think we'll start rallying before the end of the quarter, definitely. Okay, well, Ian, it's a positive update from you guys there. And if someone's listening and likes the sound of what you're doing here, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons, if you could, to hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Of course, yeah. I mean, first of all, as you can see from the trading statement, you know, we are outperforming what we said we would do. So this is a company that is poised for a sharp recovery. It's definitely in terms of, you know, global activity, what's going on. We are so well placed to really springboard ahead in into 2021 and beyond. Secondly, what we do as a business is unique, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of it targets the SME space for a essentially one-stop shop to do all of their payments. They don't need to change their bank. They can bank with whoever they want or whoever they are banking with. They just come straight to us. And thirdly, you know, we have a proven, stable executive team. You know, now we have Richard Coop on board, my CFO, you know, that's really driven a lot of change in 2020 and will continue to do so in 2021. So this is a dynamic business poised for rapid growth.
Excellent stuff. Ian, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mike Ralston, CEO of Blencar Resources, BRES. His ticker. Mike, thanks for joining me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Justin. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to all your listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to get into exactly what's up for you in this year. But before we get into a bit of detail here, Mike, if someone listening now and they've never heard of Blencar Resources, could you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Blencar Resources acquired the Orem Cross Graphite Project in Uganda in April last year. It's a sensational project. It's one of the largest graphite projects in the world. And we are moving it forward very quickly towards production. We believe graphite's got a very strong position in world markets going forward. So that's our project, and we're making good progress.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that graphite. I mean, some people will know about the relationship there between EVs, of course, and graphite. And, of course, it makes up part of the battery there. But give us an overview of the current status of the electric vehicle market, because it's a revolution, let's be honest, market worldwide, and demand for graphite within this, if you could.
Absolutely. So, as you say, I'll take a step backwards just in case there are any listeners that don't understand the relationship. But electric vehicles are, in this day and age, and certainly going forward, powered by lithium-ion batteries. The lithium-ion battery has two sides to the cathode and an anode. Approximately half of the anode, equating to about 40 to 45 kilograms per battery, is graphite. It's not all graphite that it's applicable. Spherical can only occur in high-quality graphite, but it is a key component of the lithium-ion batteries. So, surging growth in electric vehicles going forward means that there's going to be a very close correlation with demand for graphite going forward as well. And in terms of where the electric vehicle market is, well, I think we're all aware of it because we're seeing reports and evidence all around us all the time. Very recently, we've just read that Tesla has had its record production month, and I suspect that we will be having record production months going forward, every month going forward into the foreseeable future, because the market is growing so fast, and obviously Tesla is a market leader. And because of that, its market cap has risen, I think, to north of $600 billion dollars, which makes it the most valuable auto company in the world by a long way. But aside from Tesla, I think there's going to be a big impact from the Biden administration coming in the United States. Biden has already pledged to go back into the Paris Accord, and that whole renewable agenda that he's got is definitely going to play a part in terms of electric vehicle growth. It's obviously one of the key aspects in terms of renewables and green. And I think we will see the United States start to really waken the sleeping giant. At the moment, it's really China that's been driving it, and Europe that's starting to to get involved, but the United States is obviously a huge market to come on board as well. The UK itself has said no more new petrol or diesel cars will be sold after 2030. That seems like quite a long way away from where we stand today, but I think you're going to find that these agendas start to be dragged forward as everybody just gets the momentum going forward. Definitely there's infrastructure going in for recharging in the United Kingdom. It's gathering pace everywhere. And as governments throw these big stimulus packages in to grow their economies post-COVID, we're going to see a lot of that linked to infrastructure, to renewables, and obviously that's going to have an impact on electric vehicles. So in terms of the market itself, there's surging growth. As I said, about 40 kgs of every lithium-ion battery is graphite. With that EV growth, we're going to see graphite become one of the key metals or minerals going forward as we progress through this decade.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I've not seen anything like this trend. I mean, I think the last trend I think we could liken it to was the .com, by the internet, you know, when everyone realised the internet was going to be big. And because I see news every day on it, and I saw a report out today actually saying, you know, there's one planned gigafactory so far in the UK, but we need at least four or five of them, you know, up and running to support our industry. And even sales, I don't know if you've seen the sales of EV cars, they're getting spurred on by this government initiative to, you know, stop diesel and petrol, but sales are now of EV cars are jumping. And I can see this happening quicker as we get towards that 2030. I think by 2025, 2026, people will not want to buy diesel petrol cars anyway, you know. So I think it'll accelerate the trend, and of course, the money is pouring into infrastructure. So people will worry about range or the speed of charge. That'll change. That'll get better every year, pretty much. So take us through forecast demand, you know, for the next sort of 5-10 years. Then, if you could, if you have that crystal ball there, Mike.
No, well, look, taking this into account and using the numbers as portrayed by players like Benchmark Minerals Intelligence, who are the key players and forecast analysts in this industry, they're telling us that there are approximately 7 million electric vehicles in the world today. And the forecast for 2030 is 140 million vehicles on the low side, which is 20 times growth from where we are today, and 600 million electric vehicles on the high side, which is 80 times growth today. So you can imagine that 20 to 80 times growth in the next 10 years. It's obviously not going to go from where we are to that overnight. It's got to move up along the curve every year. There's going to be a very interesting pathway for everybody involved in batteries, electric vehicles, and everything else associated along the way. On the supply side, on the face of it, there's plenty of supply because everyone will tell you there's lots of graphite projects out there. But as I said before, not all graphite is applicable. The quality of that graphite is key, and that will take quite a few suppliers out of the market. The ability to finance those projects will take others out of the market. The location and the risk of where projects are located will take others out. So even if all projects get up and into production, BMI are forecasting a 1 million ton per annum deficit of graphite from 2025. This rises to 3 million tonnes by 2030 and 10 million tonnes per annum by 2040. So I think that suggests that there's going to be some price increases along the way as these demand-supply imbalances kick in. But it's going to be a question of how fast that demand, that forecast demand, kicks in and how quickly this all gathers momentum. It seems to be moving fast, but we all know that things don't happen overnight.
Yeah, you know, I think it'll be like a rolling snowball on the hill, basically. It'll gather lots of momentum. Like I said, I once everything starts, once the money starts pouring in, it is already, you know, and people are sort of not worried about range anxiety and speed of charge. Once that gets better, it'll accelerate. But take us about, specifically, talk us through your Orm Cross graphite project, you know, that, and its role in supplying this demand, you know, and maybe other markets for graphite produced as well, if you could.
Yeah, and one of our key strategies when we looked at bringing a project into Glencoe was to find something of a world-class size and scale. I think that's very important because it's all well and good being counter-cyclical in terms of picking up an asset for a low entry price, which is what we've done. But at the end of the day, you need to have something that can really ramp up. If all this demand and this supply-demand deficit occurs and prices start rising, you need to have an asset that can really scale up quickly and it's in the right location. So We love Oram Cross because it's one of the largest graphite deposits worldwide. There's 2 to 3 billion tons in situ. It's a high quality. The average grade in the ground is over the whole deposit is about 7 to 8%, but there are large pockets of 10 to 15% graphite in there, which means that one can be mining at a high grade for a very long time going forward. There are large flake sizes and there are very low impurities. So all of these are key factors that make Oram Cross quite a standout graphite project going forward. It can certainly provide a significant supply ahead as demand surges and it can upscale as required. And because it's very near to the surface, it will be mined at a very low cost. And we think that we can obviously end up producing it and exporting it and selling it for a decent margin. That will be the subject of some studies going forward. But right now, it definitely looks like we can get it up in terms of mining costs for a low range. Uganda is a very stable country compared to many other African locations that produce graphite. And we like the look of that going forward in terms of the stability. And that's very important when you're developing a project over the long haul. And we have about a 3-year window to first production, which we think coincides where that demand supply imbalance is really going to kick in and prices may start to rise. So it stands out as a project that's got a lot of good factors, a lot of company making factors going for it. And if you overlay the micro of the actual project over the macro of what's happening in the demand supply and in the electric vehicle market and the use and need of for graphite going forward, it makes Oram Cross a real standout in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Well, take us through this year. You know, what can investors expect? What kind of news flow is happening? What can you look, you know, can they look forward to?
So we moved immediately into when we acquired it to put a drilling program in to get a JORC resource. We've been very encouraged by the high quality graphite as we drilled, and the samples have all been prepped and they've been sent down to South Africa in terms of going for assaying to get ready for that first JORC resource. Our maiden JORC resource is due in this quarter, and whilst we're looking at a first 10 years life of mine in terms of the quantity, we're talking about less than 1% of the deposit that's been drilled out. So there's significant additional graphite that we can go and drill and add to the JORC at a later stage. But we focused on the first 10 years for now. At the same time, in parallel, we've got stage 2 met test work being done in Canada. That's extremely important. As I said, the quality of the graphite is what determines its value in terms of the total graphite content of the concentrate, in terms of the impurities or lack of, in terms of the flake sizes, the recoveries, etc. So that end product is very critical to us, not only in terms of where it's sold, but also in terms of the price that you will receive for it. And that leads us, I guess, into the study phase. Once we've understood our end product, once we've got our JORC, we'll be moving forward in the first half this year into an internal commercial study. And then in the second half of the year into a pre-feasibility study, which will give us lots of news flow going forward. So an exciting year for Blenker.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, if someone's listening and they're liking the sound of this and where you're positioned and news flow and all that, but and not yet following the story, give them, if you could, 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Blenker Resources to their watch list, please.
Justin, I think we've said it all in the last 10 minutes, I suppose. Mm-hmm. The electric vehicle sector is booming. Yep. It's starting to really gather pace. The sleeping giant has awoken. Oram Cross and Brez, Blenker is highly leveraged into this. And we have great evidence in terms of the high volumes that we're trading at the moment on the exchange. The second reason, I suppose, is Oram Cross has the size and scale and the quality and the low anticipated mining cost to make it a standout in the sector. I'd also like to add that we've got a good, strong management team with a lot of African mining and resource experience to develop this project. And then probably the third factor I would say is that there's not many renewables or EV-related stocks to follow on the LSE at the moment. Tirupati has recently raised some cash and doing well, but Blenker is still a fraction of this value and has a lot of upside. So there's plenty to be excited about for your listeners, those who want to follow Blenker and those who believe in the electric vehicle battery world going forward and what's going to happen there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on this year, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Alien Metals. That's at 1.5% down to 1.25 pence. At four, Equals Group. Of course, Ian on the podcast today, up 18% or 19% to 32 pence. At three, Empire Metals, down 1.12% to 4.4. At two, Blue Star Capital, 4.35% to 0.24. And at one, Argo Blockchains, up again, big riser, 38.39. And in fact, thank you there to Tom, I think it was on Twitter, who said thanks for pointing out Argo Blockchain to him. And he did 10 bags in it, first year trading. Wow, what a start to the year, 10 bags. Okay, and let's look at top five most read RNSs today are as follows. At five, Rockfire Resources, Magnetics doubles copper target, Copperhead. At four, 80 Energy, operations update. At three, Bahamas Petroleum, update on court process in the Bahamas. At two, Tomco Energy, POSP restart. And at one, Open Orphan, contract renewal with top three pharmaceutical client. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much as appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.